So tonight our topic is we are now into the topical aspects of the Proverbs, is that of male-female relationships. There's going to be a lesson on friendship later on, but this is totally focused on male-female relationships. I mean, you talk about something fundamental to the human experience. It's as fundamental as the first pages of Genesis. It's as fundamental as that's how we get human beings, more human beings. And it's as fundamental as the, I would almost say, the bulk of poetry and music centers around male-female relationships. So in the process of looking at having the choice of choosing a wise path and a foolish path, this is a very critical part of that. And that's what we're going to see tonight. So we're going to look at this, first of all, by going back into that introductory part. We are going to look at some wise sayings in the Proverbs, some of those pithy statements, but this is such a fundamental topic that those earlier chapters that introduce us to wisdom, where you don't just have a list of little statements, but you have sort of a running discussion, and you've got a topic that is developed for, you know, a good while on the page, there is a lot said about it. I want you to go back with me to chapter 5, verse 1 to 6. Chapter 5, 1 to 6. Vince, will you read those first six verses of chapter 5?
My son, give attention to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion, and your lips may reserve knowledge. For the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smooth and oil is her speech. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it.
All right. Thank you. That's a good introduction. This is the kind of thing that we find a lot of in starting in chapter 5 and extending to 6 and 7, actually. So look how that chapter 5, verses 1 through 23, deal with the forbidden woman. Some translations call her the forbidden woman. Sometimes she's referred to as the seductress or even as the adulterous woman. And we'll get into this male-female thing in just a moment. But look how that a big chunk of this introduction about wisdom is taken up with the choice of either resisting or following the seductress. And then chapter 6, verse 20 to 35. Look at that section, which talks about the same topic, really. And then chapter 7, verse 6 to 27. So what I want you to see, first of all, is that as Solomon is introducing us to wisdom, and he's giving us a foundation to understand wisdom, look how much he says about the male-female relationship. And we're going to talk about this idea of the seductress and adultery. I want you to put it, because he doesn't just talk about that, but I want you to put it in this context of male-female relationships, the wise ones and the foolish ones, is what we're talking about. So first of all, who are we talking about here when it's referring to this woman, and what path are we looking at? So go back to chapter 5 and look at verses 15 to 18. Les, can you read verse chapter 5, verse 15 to 18?
Drink water from your own cistern, and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only your own, and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times, and always be enraptured with her love.
Okay, so see the contrast there to the beginning of chapter 5? Be faithful to your wife, enjoy that relationship. More on that in a moment.
Well, I didn't quite finish, I guess. You want me to go to 23?
No, just to 18.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just to 18. Yeah. So see the contrast in chapter 5, how that is talking at the beginning of the chapter about the seductress, avoiding her, and then starting in verse 15 to 18, turning the reader's attention to the wife and so forth. So what this is talking about is the danger of the one who's not yours. There's the one that's yours. There's one that's not yours. And it's not much different than you leave a store and there's a car in the parking lot that's yours and there are cars that are not yours. The wise thing to do is get in your car and go. The foolish thing is try to get in somebody else's and take off. It's sort of that kind of binary decision there. Who else is this? Look at chapter 6. Look at verse 27 to 35. Can you read that for us, Daryl? Chapter 6, verse 27 to 35.
Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is the one who goes in to his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her will not go unpunished. Men do not despise a thief if he steals, to satisfy himself if he's hungry. But when he is found, he must repay sevenfold. He must give all the substance of his house. The one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He who would destroy himself does it. Wounds and disgrace he will find, and his reproach will not be blotted out. For jealousy enrages a man, and he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not accept any ransom, nor will he be content, though you give many gifts.
All right, so we understand biblically that there is what the earlier English translations called fornication, which is sexual morality, which is any kind of sexual sin. But we sometimes associate that with sex outside of marriage. And then there's adultery, where one of the parties is married to someone, or possibly both parties are married to someone else. And that is the emphasis in this section here, is adultery. And then, to look at it this way, look at chapter 7. Who is this? It's a temptress or a seductress. There is an enticement that's going on. So we won't read this, but in chapter 7, glance down from verse 10 down through verse 21. Chapter 7, 10 through 21. How does the temptress operate? What is her mode of operation? What are her tricks? If you glance down through there, what is she doing?
She dresses seductively.
She what? Her dress is seductive? Okay.
Yeah, premeditated.
All right, there's a planning. It's premeditated. She's got a plan. She's got an intention. You what?
A sense of aggressiveness in a way.
Okay. She's not satisfied. There's something she's wanting. Okay. What else?
She's actively searching.
She's searching. She's going after someone. What about her words?
Very smooth.
She's a smooth talker. She's very tricky and seductive. She's making a lot of promises. She's painting a picture of how wonderful this is going to be and so forth. And of course, the end of that, boy, you talk about vivid. Verse 21, with much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. All at once, he follows her. What's this like? Look at this poetry. As an ox goes to the slaughter. Or as a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver, or a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. So that's who we're talking about. We're talking about one who is not yours. We're talking about adultery in most of these contexts. We're talking about one who is a temptress here. Now, it's a good question. Why is it that in these first nine chapters that introduce the broad subject of wisdom, that this much attention is paid to this issue? Well, I've got a couple of points for you. First of all, it's a vivid demonstration of choosing wisdom over folly. It is a primo case study for this. Okay. For instance, if you look at chapter 5, the first couple of verses, chapter 5, 1 and 2, what is the admonition there? What is the encouragement there? All right. Be wise, have discretion. Same thing we've seen over and over and over and over in the first few chapters. Okay? Get knowledge, all those kinds of things. And then verse 3, 4, the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey. There's the contrast. You need to be wise because you need to avoid the forbidden woman. And then if you look in chapter 7, again, what is he doing in verses 1 to 5 of chapter 7?
Advising
him to do what?
Treasure his word.
Treasure the wisdom. Pursue wisdom. That same thing that we've seen over and over in those early chapters. Pursue wisdom. Be wise. Then he gives an example. Verse 6. For at the window of my house I looked out and through my lattice, and I've seen among the simple, I perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense. And he's the one who's going to step into the trap of the seductress. So see the contrast there? Be wise, pursue wisdom, or fall into the trap of the seductress. And so what you've got here is a vivid demonstration of what it means to choose wisdom or choose folly. And it has all the elements. So we've been looking at this background to wisdom. What does wisdom involve? We've talked about how that it all comes from God, that it's not just a matter of being savvy in this life. It's a moral issue. That being righteous and holy and upright is correlated to being wise and all these kinds of things. And sure enough, this is a moral issue about being faithful to your wife and not led astray by a seductress. And that these two paths, and we've seen that wisdom is all about paths. You can choose the wise path. And choosing the wise path means that you look way down the path. You see where it's going. Wisdom, it has foresight. Wisdom looks at consequences tomorrow, next week, next year, all through your life. Foolishness doesn't do that. Doesn't contemplate the outcome. It's very immediate gratification, those kinds of things. And self-control. We're going to see a lot of the wise advice in the book of Proverbs relates to self-control. And there you go. It's a tailor-made subject for demonstrating wise decisions or foolish decisions. But in and of itself, it's such a critical area. So, sexual sins are, in a way, no more consequential than lying or stealing or violent behavior. Sins have different consequences, and they're all very heavy. And obviously with God, it's all a violation of the will of God. And sexual sins have huge consequences to them. But it seems like that this particular thing, not just the idea of sexual sin, but the kind of relationship you develop with the opposite sex. Are you going to be wise? Are you going to be foolish? It seems that of all the paths in life, this is one of the most challenging areas to be wise. In which to be wise. Okay. And there are a lot of people who make really good decisions and show a lot of wisdom and a lot of discernment in a lot of things in life. And if they're a man when it comes to women, or if it's a woman when it comes to men, they're a gigantic fool. They just keep making the wrong choice. They can't get that right. And it's a very unique kind of element there. And, you know, yes, there's sexual morality, but sometimes it's just, and we're going to see this when we look at some of the other passages later on in the book. It's not just avoiding the temptress, it's also finding the worthy woman. It's both. That's wisdom. And a lot of people really struggle with that. They really do. And it seems like that wisdom in this area seeps into other things. So look with me in chapter 5 again. The end of chapter 5, again, he's warning about the seductress when he says in verse 20, "Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths." His ways, his paths. Look how broad that is. "The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. Watch how that the writer is specifically focused on being faithful to your wife, avoiding the adulteress, but then he broadens the scope and describes wisdom in general and the consequences of foolishness in general, ways and paths and so forth. Like this. If you can get this one right, if you can get this one right, it's huge. And you can be really wise in a lot of other things, but if you don't show wisdom in this one, the outcome is huge. Really is. Yes.
And the perfect example, of course, is Solomon himself.
Yeah.
I mean, all of this wisdom, and then he has 3,000 women. Okay. And those women took him away from God because of their idolatry, and he's building temples for them on the high places, which then results in the loss of the United Kingdom, the divided kingdom, which dissolves from that point forward.
Yeah.
So the consequences were very apparent.
Yeah. It's sobering to think who wrote this and what happened. It's sobering. It's like someone once said, and I don't know who said it, somebody said, it doesn't matter, it's in the Bible, but if you think that you can't mess up when it comes to women, you are more spiritual than David, you're stronger than Samson, and you're wiser than Solomon. Because all three of those men messed up when it came to women. And certainly it was sexual morality involved, but not just sexual morality. Even Samson just picking the wrong wife. So, it's a whole package kind of thing. Okay? So, a chunk of material in those foundational chapters about it. And there you go. All right, anything else? Yeah, Andrew?
Just adding on to that, I think that's the reason that he puts this ending for the wise. This is the most difficult and most dangerous thing to them.
Yeah, because it has such a lifelong impact.
Really does. I mean, if you take Proverbs as being early Solomon and Ecclesiastes as later, I mean, you really feel the difference even there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is the case.
But Solomon, I mean, with his, you know, 1,000 wives, I mean, they turned his heart. David obviously had the Uriah the Hittite thing. He committed murder. I mean, a man otherwise, and otherwise in all other aspects of life is a good, very good man, but this will take you down somewhere you don't want to go.
And I want you to see the balance, and we'll get to the balance of this, and that is, I'm just going to throw this out there, that the world thinks that the Christian's perspective is that, you know, everything's negative about sex. And that's not the case. It's about what is wise and what is foolish regarding this. And so we'll get to the negatives and the positives here. So let's look at some of the wise sayings that we find even later on. Before we do that, though, let's talk about the male-female thing. Why is it that when we encounter, we only going to find really one reference to a husband or a man, as it says in the text? Because the term husband and wife is sort of it's not in the Greek, I don't think it's in the Hebrew either. It's like there's a woman and then there's my woman, which means wife, okay, that kind of thing. When you attach a certain woman to a man or a man to a woman. But we will encounter women negatively and positively in the Proverbs here, in these sayings. Why? Why not advice about men for women? What's the context?
Because he says at the beginning he's talking to his son.
Right. Context here is a father to a son. So he's going to give the advice about women. But any general principles apply, you think? I mean, we're going to see a woman who doesn't have discretion and a woman who is quarrelsome. Have you ever met a man who didn't have discretion? Calm down, woman. Figure out your screams, okay? You ever find a man that's quarrelsome? Yeah. Contentious man? Yeah. So understand that this can go both ways. And can a man be like the worthy woman of Proverbs 31? Well, it's not doing some of the things she does, but he can be as honorable and virtuous as a woman could be. I mean, a man can be that way. So understand the context. Context is to a son. So don't trip over that gender thing. It goes both ways. You just have to make the effort to say, okay, instead of a daughter, a son, what if you're a daughter? Well, what advice are you giving? So let's look at just a few here that portray the admirable qualities in the opposite sex. 11:16. Tristan, will you read that for us in just a moment? And then Ray Cummings, I'm going to have you turn to Proverbs 31 and have you read out of that in just a moment. Okay, Tristan, can you read 11:16, please?
A gracious woman retaineth honor, and a strong man retains riches.
Okay. All right. So this is one of those parallelisms, okay? English Standard says on that, 11:16, let me go over to that. It's a little bit different. A gracious woman gets honor, a violent man gets riches, okay? So it seems to be a contrast, but what I want you to see is the first one. A gracious woman gets honor. Gracious woman and what else? Any other translations? What were the other translations?
Ruthless.
I'm sorry, it's full
out. I have ruthless. For the woman is gracious.
A gracious woman. Okay, retains honor, okay? Everybody's translation says gracious woman. Okay, all right. So what do you think that involves, a gracious woman? From the Old Testament standpoint of the use of the term gracious. Can you think of any gracious women in the Old Testament?
Abigail.
Oh, that's the first one. That's how I think of her. Yes, Abigail had encountered David and saved her husband's hide from revenge. Abigail, she is the personification of the virtue.
The NIV says kind-hearted.
Kind-hearted woman. I think that's probably a good translation. Not a big fan of the NIV, except in the poetry of the Old Testament. It's probably its strongest point. The NIV is good in the Old Testament poetry. It's got some issues in the letters, and you probably studied that in the New Testament. But it's really a nice, handy translation for the poetry. It is. All right, let's go to 31. One of the more famous sections from Proverbs, I think, at least for some people. And while everything from chapter 11 forward is basically a list of pithy statements, here we have in chapter 31 some short discourses, including the one about what is sometimes called the excellent woman or the virtuous woman. So let's sample a little bit of it. Ray, 31:10-11, please.
An excellent wife, who can find? She's far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain.
And then skip down to verse 23 and read that verse, please.
Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land.
Okay. So according to these verses, the excellent or the virtuous wife, what impact does she have on her husband?
Very large impact.
Such as? What does it say?
Such as that.
Verse 11 says two things.
He trusted her.
That's right. So there's this bond of trust. And what does it say? That he'll have no lack of gain. Okay, this comes back to the thing we looked at a couple weeks ago. There are some places in the Proverbs where gain or wealth or bounty is talked about in a positive way. And we're not talking about the person who's living for wealth and living for earthly gain. But the idea that you work hard, you show good judgment, and you accumulate for your benefit and enjoyment and for the benefit of others who may need your help. And that's how I would like for you to see when you run across these positive expressions of wealth in the book of Proverbs, because we're headed toward this, because we're going to look at work and laziness and things such as that. That there are some positive things said about wealth. And it's not the idea of living for riches. It's the idea that you work hard, you use it wisely, you accumulate, and you do good things with it. As opposed to you're lazy You're undependable, you're dishonest, and nobody trusts you, nobody will employ you, and you're in need, and you can't help yourself, let alone anybody else. And so, and the Proverbs presents that as a moral issue, okay? So, he's got a partner he can depend on, and he's got a partner that is enabling them to do well, even physically. And what's it say down in verse 23 about her impact on him?
And being known in the gates.
Okay, is that just the idea that, hey, yeah, I know who you are, you're Vince, hey, you're Frank. Known in the gates, what do you think that means when he sits among the elders?
He's one of
them. Okay, he's one of them. What position is this, you think?
Leadership,
honor, respect, isn't it? It's exactly what it is. So, who do you want as your partner? It's this kind of woman, because look how that impacts you. And so here, the point of that is this. When it comes to marrying, you're one. And who that person is going to affect who you are, your life, what you're able to do or not do, and how people affect, how people look at you, and the kind of relationship you have with them. It's going to have an impact. Now, glance down through this section from verse 12 all the way down to verse 27. Why is this woman such an excellent wife, such a virtuous woman? What are some characteristics that you see in her? What is she doing? What is this saying about her?
She's thrifty.
Thrifty. Diligent in what she does. What are you going to say?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. She's wise, okay? She has good judgment?
Well, I think, first of all, she fears the Lord. I mean, my heading doesn't say virtuous, it says a woman who fears the Lord.
Because that's what's talked about at the very end, isn't it? We'll come back to that in verse 30. That's the secret to her success, right?
She's diligent.
Yeah, diligent. She's working hard, focused. Yeah. How, this. What I'm impressed with this woman is she does so many different things and she does them so well. And she's involved in business activities. Did you see that? She's buying and selling things. She's trading. She's involved in commercial activities. But she's making sure that everybody around her is what?
Taking care of.
Children, husband, servants. Everybody. Boy, she's got the energy, doesn't she? She gets up early. There's no idleness about her. The creativity, the versatility, and the energy of this woman. It's a marvelous picture, isn't it? And here's the key. I mean, here's the real key. Let's go back to Ray. Ray, will you read the last four verses, 31, 28 to 31, please? 31, 28 to 31.
Her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates.
Okay, we're going to come back to verse 30, but as Rory pointed out, this is the key. I mean, this is the crown of her description, and that is a woman who fears the Lord. And everything else is a trickle down there. And of course, you can have some of these qualities and not be a woman who knows the Lord and walks with the Lord and so forth, but it certainly does, the energy does stem from that, very much so. Well, two ways to apply those qualities right there that we looked at very quickly. One is, if you're a male, this is the woman you're looking for. If you're a woman, this is the woman you need to strive to be. Even if you're already married, this is what you're striving to be. The gracious woman, the woman who has these excellent qualities, etc. And then, flip side, qualities to avoid. Look back in 11:22. Zachary, can you read 11:22 for us? And then, Lori, I'm going to get you to read chapter 21 here in just a second. All right, 11:22, Zachary.
Like a gold ring and a pig's snout, a beautiful woman without discretion.
Okay. What's her problem? She's a looker. She's stunning. But what?
She lacks discretion.
What do we mean by that? Discretion.
Doesn't have good taste.
Taste, okay. Discretion, discernment, judgment, all very similar, right? Got an idea? I mean, would we say that, you know, we just looked at, read through Psalm 119 and saw the different ways the Word of God is phrased. In a way, discretion is wisdom, right? The discreet person is wise. The wise person is discreet. So they are, you know, connected. All right, 21, 9, and 19. I don't know why I won't pick on my previous.
I don't either.
I don't either. Frank, you got in trouble the other day. Now I'm in trouble, so. We finished this class, I'm just going to set up with you. Is that okay? No. I guess because I know she's not like this. All right, 21. I got out of that. 21, 9, and then 19.
It is better to live in a corner of the housetop than in a house shared with a quarrelsome wife. It is better to live in a desert land than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman.
So, just a little bunch there, Zachary. Just make sure, you know, check out those references where you had your wife read one. But, so, it's repeated twice in the same chapter. And one is saying, you're better off on top of the roof, not in the house, than with a woman who's quarrelsome or contentious. And you're better off in the wilderness, in the middle of nowhere, in the desert, than to be with her. Okay. Again, qualities to avoid if you're a female, even if you're already married, about your discretion and about being contentious or quarrelsome. And if you're a male and if you're seeking to be married, you need to look for these qualities. And if you find them, it's a red flag. The red flag. Now, marriage is a whole other topic, marriage adjustments and so forth. You know, you're not married exactly who you thought you were going to get married to. We have to learn each other and discover things, good and bad, okay? And you have to make adjustments. But that doesn't mean that if you see red flags, they're unimportant. It's easy to take that kind of, well, you know, you never know until you married somebody, you know. Yeah, I see that about them. You know, it'll be different when we get married. You know, there are going to be some things you don't see in them before you get married, positive and negative. But if you do see red flags, you've got to react. And sometimes that means taking another path, okay? But I want you to see these. This is just a sampling, and this is most of what it says about specifically about the relationships. But again, back in this big picture, it's about choice. So here's a way we can summarize these things. There are really three simple guidelines for living wisely in relationships. Okay, now, I'm going to tell you what's not on this list. I'm going to give you three things. One thing that's not on this list is chemistry. Obviously, if you can't stand being around someone, that's a red flag, okay? But chemistry, this emotional kind of sparking that you have with someone, that you get around them and you just have this kind of feeling about them and all that, that's real. That's a part of dating and all that kind of thing. But that's way, 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 way down here. That's not one of the keys to good relationships with the opposite sex. And also the idea of their looks. And I mean, obviously, if you cannot stand to put your eyes on them, you probably ought not to date them, and you probably ought not marry them. Okay? You can't go around with a blindfold, that kind of thing. And it's also not, what's not on this list is who you fall for. And you know what I mean by that, because we've all heard enough songs. As much as we love the songs, but the notion of falling in love and being swept away with emotion, and this is the one true soulmate, and you just sort of, the ships have just crossed and hit each other, and it's just somehow this destiny kind of thing, and it's wonderful, to have the emotions and all those kinds of things, but that's not high on the list of the keys to a successful relationship with someone of the opposite sex. It's not. And actually, that kind of romantic love, there's always been an element of that in human relationships. Okay? You see it in the Bible. But in most cultures, romantic love was not a chief factor in who you married. I know that sounds shocking to us. Okay? But I'm telling you, it's not a chief factor. So, let me give you three things here. First of all, don't fall for mere physical enticement. Look in chapter 6. Look at this wording here. This is back in one of those sections warning about the seductress. Chapter 6, verse 25. Rachel, will you read that for us? 6:25.
Do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her catch you with her eyelids.
Okay. Look at that. Don't let her capture you with her eyelashes. I mean, is there anything weaker on the body than an eyelash? There's no muscle to it. But when it comes to a woman who's beautiful with beautiful eyes, it's sort of more powerful than eyelashes. Okay? And it's saying, don't let her capture you with eyelashes. About the seductress. And that's why that contrast, again, over in 31:30, this is huge. Charm is deceitful. Somebody can be charming. They can be just so charming. Same thing with men, too. Matter of fact, this is just as big, if not bigger. They can be charming and witty and just be so cute and funny and so interesting. It can be deceitful. That doesn't necessarily reflect their true character. And beauty is vain. You want to learn how that really is true? Go to an older person's house and ask to see their pictures when they were young and newly married. You'll be shocked. She's actually beautiful. He's handsome. Okay? Yeah, those same people. So beauty is vain. It doesn't last. It doesn't last. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. So that's why the New Testament epistle, I just got those up there, 1 Timothy and 1 Peter 3, emphasize women. Don't let your adorning be, think about jewelry and clothing, okay? Even clothing is mentioned in 1 Peter 3. Well, you have to wear clothing, but your adornment, in other words, what is it that you're using to communicate who you really are? It should be your godly character. So don't fall for the mere physical enticement and don't adorn yourself that way if you're already married. The best relationship you can have with your partner is not through beauty and charm. It's through godly character. That's how you build a better relationship. And then the second of all, choose and be a godly person with good character who shows wisdom. So we're talking about the woman who's virtuous, the woman who's excellent, far above rubies, the woman who has discretion and all these kinds of things. It's the guideline of choosing the godly person and then being the godly person with good character who shows wisdom. And third of all, enjoy that relationship that you do have. So go back to chapter 5. Look at all that section there from verse 6, really verse 3, I'm sorry, all the way down to verse 14 is warning about the seductress. But look at the shift. Look at the pivot. Drink water from your own sister. Okay? Verse 17. Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. You choose that godly person, and then look what it says in verse 18. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. I want you to look at that statement there, verse 18 and 19, those statements. These are commands. Be joyful with the wife of your youth. Be intoxicated with her love. These are things you make an effort at. You work at it. So here is the big shocking news that the world will not tell you. The most satisfying relationship with one of the opposite sex, including the sexual dimension, is picking a person of character that you can trust and building a lifelong relationship and then choosing to work at enjoying that. That person gets more joy from a relationship with one of the opposite sex than someone who follows the world's path of foolishness. Big difference. It's just whether you trust God that His wisdom is the best way or not. But it's actually a more enjoyable relationship this way, not the world's way. Okay, thank you. It's a lot to cover there. Thank you very much.